Thanks, Janice, for the warm welcome. G'day all, I'm Steve Algalig, very gratefully sober today. My sobriety date is the 10th of September 1993, and I came into Alcoholics Anonymous roughly June or July of 1989. When I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was absolutely beat. I don't know why I came, although in a sense I guess that'll probably reveal itself through the share, but basically just to touch on what it was like for me, I started drinking somewhere around mid-teens, and you know, we hear a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous that we drank for the effect, and I just loved booze. To me, there's nothing wrong with booze. I absolutely loved it. I guess I was the sort of person, in a sense, that I had a relatively okay upbringing, had a pretty sort of strict father, I guess, with a lot of his own self-centered ideas in a lot of ways that did cause a little bit of havoc in the family, but apart from that, you know, pretty loved, pretty cared for, had an education that I kind of threw half of that away, had a lot of good friends, but when I look back inwardly, I guess there were insecurities in a sense that I often felt less than. I sometimes felt like I didn't fit in, and like I think every human being to one degree or the other, we all want to fit in, gain that sense of security of being accepted, to be seen to have some value. And I guess in a lot of those areas there was a little bit lacking. I wouldn't say to a detrimental extent, but you know, I had a pretty good life, I guess. But I remember clearly when I discovered alcohol, it just completely changed the way I felt about myself. It gave me things like courage, it gave me things like ambition. I think I didn't worry so much about what other people felt. I felt a new sense of freedom in a lot of ways that I couldn't feel before. And I basically absolutely loved the stuff. And I think when I really look back at my mid-teens, late teens to early 20s, I did an apprenticeship in the building industry. I hung around with quite a few guys, or a few guys I went to school with. We went into the building industry, plus picked up a couple of other friends, and there was a bunch of us for a lot of years that hung around together. And we drank and got into other stuff, as a lot of people in their late teens and early 20s do, and we had a lot of fun, and we were very active in a lot of outdoor activities and used to go away a lot, but it was always revolved around booze. And when I look back at that, I certainly didn't see anything wrong. What I did notice as I started to get, I think, into my 20s, he talks in the doctor's opinion about the alcoholic has an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Now, at this stage in my early 20s, I certainly didn't know I had a physical allergy, but what I do recollect that I saw when I started to come to AA, when I looked back at my early drinking, is I remember I started to become aware of an abnormal reaction, in the sense of a lot of people I hung out with and had known for a long time, I started to notice that the way I drank was abnormal to them, or as I probably looked at it, they were abnormal to me. We all went out and drank, we all got drunk on many occasions, and what I started to see is, I guess in a sense, not that I knew it back then, was the beginnings of step one, in the sense that I could not seem to control my drinking. And I remember seeing a lot of people, good friends of mine, for instance, back in that stage, who, although we would still drink and get into other things, they started to become a bit more responsible in life. They started to do things like further their education and career. They started to look at buying houses. They started to become responsible and doing things that I guess young adults would do. And they didn't necessarily stop their drinking, but what I notice is drinking was becoming more an important part of my life. And as I watched them start to become more responsible and manageable with life growing up, I remember for quite a period of time thinking I must get on and do the same things. And really from somewhere around about that point of time there, I can see that my my drinking, I drank more, and my life was becoming more and more unmanageable, and the whole focus of my life started to revolve around more so whatever I did, whatever I got involved in, alcohol had to be a part of my life. I relate very strongly in Bill's story where he talks about alcohol ceased to become a luxury and became a necessity. And at some point of time in my, I think I was around 22 or 23, I went over to Western Australia. This girl I was quite friendly with at the time who I met here, she went back over there, and her idea was to get me over there, to get me away from alcohol and other things here. And I went over there and I basically fell into an alcoholic's paradise. She had a lot of friends that were managers of nightclubs around the city of Perth and in five-star hotels, and they became my friends, and I basically went nocturnal in Western Australia. I got into all these clubs for free. I got free drinks. I'd be coming home at 5, 6 in the morning. And one thing that I do recollect over there, again, when I look back on, and all these things when I went through step one, I started to look back at my experience of my early drinking to simply see, well, did I have power to control my drinking or not? And was I able to manage life or not? And I remember quite clearly when I was over there that it was the first time that I started to have this awareness in my life there was something wrong with the way I was drinking. He also talks in the book something to the effect of many of us had gone way beyond the point where we could do anything about it ourselves, probably when we first became aware of it. And I came back to Melbourne thinking to myself that I'd better get my life back in order. But when I look back at that, even in my early 20s, I realised there is no way I could have done anything on my own power about my drinking. Although I had the best intentions to get ahead in life, just as anybody did, I came back here and basically from that point of early 20s to the age of 29, I think it was, when I walked in the doors of AA, my alcoholism progressed at a very rapid state. I was a morning drinker. I got to a stage pretty much in the last, I think, 4 or 5 years where I was drinking pretty much all day, every day. Again, there's that thing of Wilson, ceased to become a luxury and became a necessity. My ability to work and socialise started to drop off. I became physically sick. I started to drink that much straight spirits that in the latter stage of my drinking, I developed an ulcer inside that started to bleed, which caused me to become anemic. So I wasn't eating and I was just drinking full on. A typical day in probably the last 4 or 5 years of my drinking was I would have to have a bottle of scotch down the back of the bed. It just had to be there. And when I woke up in the morning, the first thought I had when my eyes opened was to reach down, grab that bottle and just top up, just stop the shakes and the sweats. And I would just take a few guzzles of scotch and sit there, and then I would start to get that ease and comfort from the shaking and the sweating and the impending doom. And then after a half an hour or so of just topping up on a few mouthfuls of scotch, I kind of sort of felt I could start my day. But little did I know then that I had an allergy which compelled me to drink. And what I basically did until I walked into AA was once I'd taken that morning drink, it compelled me to just continue to top up all day. And probably because of that physical illness that really, really brought me down, I was in a very rapid decline in the last 4 or 5 years. A year before I got to AA, which I think would have been 1989, which is interesting when I look at this, because it really reflects to me the insanity of alcoholism. And my parents were so worried about me, they called a nurse round, and at those stages I was just pretty much living in my bedroom. I'd lost the ability to work completely. I disassociated with most of my friends. I didn't go out anywhere. I pretty much literally just lived to drink and drank to live. And I just stayed in my room. And I guess the way I looked at it back then, if I had a bottle of scotch, a carton of cigarettes and the TV still worked, then my life was just fine. And, you know, he says again in the doctor's opinion, the alcoholic's abnormal life to him or her becomes normal. And my perception of me was, this is my life, this is how I live life. I remember back in those days towards the end when I'd, pretty much the only time I'd go out anywhere is when I'd go up to the shops every day to get a stash of booze, because I would rather die than not have enough booze in the house. I couldn't bear the thought of not having enough booze. And what that is in me then, that's the allergy, just crying out that you've just got to have alcohol, you've got to go to the ends of the earth to make sure you've got enough alcohol. And the more alcohol I had around me, say for instance some nights I'd come home with two bottles of scotch, I just felt that sense of security, everything's going to be all right. And this particular night, I remember these two nurses walked into my bedroom, and I don't know if I was thinking, am I getting lucky here, or am I hallucinating, or what's going on? And my parents were that worried, they called these nurses round anyway. They took a blood test, and I didn't think much of it. I was pretty much drunk all the time and couldn't really care less as long as they did what they did and left me alone. And I think it was that night about, I don't know, 10, 11 o'clock, and the pathologist rang my parents, and he said, we don't normally make these calls, we normally report back to your doctor, but he said, you got to get your son into the hospital right now. And what had happened was I bled so internally that my blood count was about 2.1, and I was on the verge of not lasting, and I reluctantly went into the hospital. About 12 o'clock at night, one of Melbourne's major hospitals here, and had 5 units of blood pumped into me. And the interesting thing, when I was in there, I just had this intense, real intense feeling of, I don't want to be here, and I tried to escape. I thought, if I can just get down and get out of the hospital and get a taxi, I can pay the guy, I got some money back at my joint, and I got half a bottle of scotch at home, and I'll be all right. And to me, when I look back at that, it frightens me that I'm in that state, in that physical condition, bordering on not coming out of that hospital, and all I can think about is, I want to be at home where I've got a bottle of scotch. That's all I could think about. I continued to drink for another year before I walked to Alcoholics Anonymous, and how I got to AA was, it was somewhere in that year, I'd been seeing a doctor who we had as a family doctor for years, and I have recollections, it's the first time that I actually mentioned to this guy about my drinking. And I figure that this guy knew a little bit about alcoholism, because the only thing I remember saying to him, or rather him saying to me when I talked about my drinking, beside the fact that he had my hospital record, so I guess he put two and two together and came up with alcoholic, and he mentioned a meeting of AA that was to become my home group when I first went there. And I remember this guy said that he'd had a couple of patients who seemed to have trouble with alcohol, and they went to Alcoholics Anonymous and it seemed to do them good. And that's all he said. We talk about the seed being planted in AA, and I don't know why, but I remembered that for nearly another year. And the only reason I remembered it, because many years ago in my mid-teens, I used to be involved with these youth groups, and the place that he told me the meeting at was a church where I used to go to these youth groups in my mid-teens. And I don't know whether there was a connection there, but it stayed in my mind for a year as I continued to drink the way I had. And I was telling a guy about it the other day, that I, for some reason, this Tuesday night that the Templestowe meeting was on, was no different. I'd been drinking all day, and I got in my car and I went to drive up to this place that I knew where the meeting was. And I remember driving up the road, it was only about 10 minutes from home, and I was halfway up there and I just had this intense feeling of, I don't want to go to this place, I just wanted to turn round and go back home. Sometimes what I've come to see quite a lot is that when we're really crying out from the depths of our spirit for help, sometimes there's a God or a power working in our lives and we can't see it. And what I see when I look back on that event, as much as I wanted to turn the car around and go home because I was just frightened to go to this place, I was too frightening, it was easier to go home and drink, but there was something that, I don't know, just kept me going, and I walked into this meeting. And the only thing I can remember from my first meeting or two, I was drunk. I remained drunk when I came to AA for, I think, roughly the next 13 months. But the only thing I can remember that overwhelmed me was this realization that, oh my God, I'm not alone. There are other people that maybe drink like me and feel like me. And I think that was probably one of the things at that stage, because I was at a very low ebb. And I think that was the thing that drew me back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think back in that first 12 months, to the best of my recollection, maybe twice, three times, whatever, a week, I went to a couple of meetings. And again, there was like something was drawing me, because again, what is normal for me as an alcoholic is to stay home drinking like I drank. That is normal. I will drink myself to death that way and perceive it as being normal. What is abnormal is me to go to a place to be confronted with doing something about my drinking. Again, that's the insanity of alcoholism. But there was something drawing me to these meetings. And I got to a place at 13 months where I stopped going to AA. I remember vaguely being in a meeting, and I didn't know at the time that my problem is I can't stop. I didn't understand that I had a physical allergy then, that once I put alcohol into my body craves alcohol and I cannot stop drinking. Doesn't matter how much I want to. And the reason I left this, or left AA, was exactly that. I remember hearing things like, you know, don't pick up the first drink and all that stuff we hear in AA. And I remember thinking to myself, I just couldn't bring myself to putting the bottle down and leaving it there. And I walked away from AA. And when I look back at that, to me, that's 100% characteristic of an alcoholic. I didn't know that that's what I can't do that. I can't stop drinking. I think I was lucky in a sense. In my mid-teens and once in my early 20s, I had two experiences. When I say profound, they weren't white lights and thunderbolts, but profound to give me a knowing that there was a God. They just happened. I didn't set out to find it. It was just something that happened at certain stages of my life. And when I look back, the worst of my drinking, or as my drinking progressed, I don't know why, I never blamed God. I never thought there was no God. I suffered like all hell. And there were a lot of times when I was alone by myself looking up into the darkness of the night, I would say things like, I know you're there, God, but why am I like this? And what I came to see when I look back again, that there was a God working. And when I'd left AA, I can't really remember now. It might have been a month or two later. And I got up one Sunday morning, and I remember being so low. I don't think at that stage I'd ever been, let alone physically, but spiritually, emotionally and mentally, so low inside myself in all my life. And I remember got up that morning, and I sat on the side of my bed with my head in my hands, and just right down at the core of my being, I was just saying to myself inwardly, I just can't go on. And what happened that morning that was unlike any other morning was, for some reason, there was no compulsion to reach down for the bottle. And I didn't drink that morning. Now, I find that really interesting, because when I look back, I was still drinking the way I'd always been drinking. Grabbed it in the morning, just topped up all through the day, drank into the night, went to bed, got up the next day, did the same thing. So I never set out the night before getting up thinking, well, I'm going to quit drinking tomorrow. I have no recollection of asking God when I got up in the morning to take it away. It just happened. And what I see when I look back on that the obsession that day was removed. and I know that I was crying out with all the desperation of the drowning man. I wasn't crying out to stop drinking. I don't remember crying out saying, God, take the pain away. I remember crying out in a sense of sitting there and thinking to myself, I just can't go on. I went through the most terrific detox at home, had these incredible hallucinations. I haven't spoken to a lot of alcoholics that have had severe hallucinations coming off a detox, and I had these hallucinations going on for the next 2 days, and there were things happening that were very, very real. I was seeing things and talking to things, and my parents thought I was going round the twist, and all I could think about was, when I'm capable of driving the car, something was in my head was saying, go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And about 2 weeks later, I walked back into that room sober, and I was greeted by a lot of older members back then, and a huge amount of encouragement, and I was frighteningly overwhelmed by their encouragement, but there was this inner draw to get involved in AA. And it started my sober time in AA. I think that was in sometime in 1990 when I first got sober. And when I look back, I didn't understand a lot of things at the time, but what I see that was so vitally important to me were a couple of things. That from that time I walked back into AA sober, I reckon for the next 15 to 16 years, I was pretty much out of meetings all night, every night, and back then during the day, because I didn't work for a long time when I got into AA. And I feel fortunate that I just wanted to be at meetings. My whole life was get to a meeting, go to a meeting, be around AA people. And I'm grateful of that, because what happens is I started to get right into the middle of AA. A lot of members from these home groups, and when I came in, there were a lot of older members around. And they encouraged me to join the group. I made this Templestowe group my home group. They gave me the job as literature officer. I started to sit on the steering committee meetings and help out and set up and do all those things that we do around the groups. And I guess being in the building trade and being a carpenter, to an extent, I'm a hands-on person, and I don't know, it's just in me to go up there early and help set up, you know, put in a bit of effort and help them pack up at the end of the day, and I'd hang around usually till the last one to leave at night. And as confused and sick and twisted in the head as I was, when I look back with a lot of fond sentiment of my early sober AA, because those people drew me right in, and if I could have dug myself any deeper into the fellowship, I happily would have done so. I don't think I really realise how sick I was, because I remember getting to a year and looking back and thinking, geez, you were sick. I remember to get into 2 and 3 and 4 years and looking back going, I thought I was well, but I was really sick. But it didn't matter, because there was a power there that was keeping me right in the middle of AA, and I was quite happy. I didn't want to drift away from it. But I got to 2 weeks short of 12 months, and I was pretty stoked, like I guess we all are. It's pretty special that first time coming up to 12 months. And I remember I was sharing at my home group one night, and part of the share was something to the effect of, just out of gratitude, you know, sharing that I'm nearly 12 months. I was just stunned. I was stunned. I was sober for a week, let alone 12 months. And it's an interesting point, that, because I mentioned before that obsession was taken that Sunday morning, and right up to this point, 2 weeks before 12 months sober, I'd thought about alcohol a lot, because it's the most natural thought I'm going to have as an alcoholic. I'm going to think about alcohol. It's going to be in my head a lot of the time. But there was no obsession there that took me to a place where I picked it up, and I couldn't see the profound experience that God had removed that obsession to drink. All I knew was I wasn't drinking, and I, even though I thought about it, there was not enough desire to go pick it up, and I just thought, here we go, you're living sober. And I remember sharing that I was grateful that I was almost 2 weeks sober. Well, 2 weeks short of 12 months sober, I picked up a drink again, and I was crushed. I had been made the secretary of the Templestowe group, and it was torture. I thought, my God, in the whole history of AA, I'm probably the only secretary that's ever busted. And I was devastated, and they took the secretarial ship off me, and which they rightly did so, but I was absolutely floored that I could possibly drink again. And to sort of cut a long story short, over the next 2 or 3 years, I repeated exactly the same thing. I never left AA. I was always right in the middle of the fellowship and service positions, and also involved doing things where I could at about a couple of other groups that I frequented all the time. And this pattern came up around, I don't know, 10, 11 months. I got to this place where I kind of like felt like I got on this emotional plateau, like that newness of new sobriety had sort of worn off, and there were emotions and feelings going on inside me that I didn't understand, didn't know how to address. And I think I really just sort of had that childlike faith that, you know, don't leave before the miracle, it gets better, all this stuff. And I thought one day through some form of osmosis, maybe that's all just going to right itself. And I continued to bust again. I'd get to this emotional plateau, kind of like looking around, thinking there must be something more. Am I missing something? You know, what else is there to do? Is this as far as it goes? And each and every time I got there, I would drink again. My experience of drinking after being sober in AA, emotionally and mentally, was way more painful, tenfold more painful every time I went back, and just disillusioning beyond belief. I couldn't figure it out. I was frightened of drinking. I remember when I first got sober, the idea that I could drink again where alcohol took me, I was frightened. I was petrified at the idea that I could drink again. And the worst thing was, I didn't understand why. What happened to me, I mentioned my sobriety date. In September of 1993 was the last time I drank. It was preceded by something else. I won't go into that in depth, but I got back on the drink again, and I nearly walked away from AA, not because AA doesn't work, because every time I go to a meeting of AA, I see a miracle. I see lots of miracles. I see alcoholics that are sitting in meetings of AA and they're sober. It doesn't matter if they're a week sober or they're 30 or 40 years sober, but they've been freed of alcohol. So I knew AA worked, but what I started to have was this perception of myself that I'm less than you guys, I'm worse, there's something so wrong with me, I just can't get it. In a lot of ways, I didn't have, in a lot of ways, not always, but in a general sense, I had not that high ego, but I more had that low self-esteem. It's like I remember a lot of those beautiful older members were just so loving and encouraging, and they'd say things to me over the years like, you're looking better, Steve, and you're a great bloke, and you know, we appreciate your help and we really like you, and they'd say things like that, and as I'm nodding at them inside my head's going, don't tell me that, I'm not worth that, I'm no good, I'm not worthy of that sort of stuff, and I didn't believe that I was worthy of a lot of that stuff. Pour alcohol on top of me and my experiences, that was just going to amplify how I see myself, and the reason that I nearly didn't come back to AA. And it's a really scary thing, because we lose a lot of people. And the reason that I didn't come back is because I thought, I can't get it. And what happens, that's a frightening thing for alcoholics, well, if you're anything like me it is when I get to a place in AA where I've lost my vision of hope, and I walk out the door, and I remember thinking to myself, I know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to do what I do normally, is just drink all day, every day, and drink myself into oblivion and death. He says in Bill's story, you know, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity, just being so far removed from everybody and everything and resigned to the fact that you're going to drink yourself into oblivion. And you know what's really scary in that place? Just quietly in my mind, I'd be sitting there thinking, I don't care. I don't care. My experience is, you people cannot get me sober. I can't get me sober. No human power can get me sober. But what happened in that time was, I think I'd been around AA long enough to realize that something was going on. And the same thing as when I first got sober. I did on every bus, just like I did on this last time that I drank. I find when I'm alone in my own deluded and bewildered thoughts, just trying to figure out probably one of the most common things I have said to myself over many, many, many years, and many years before I get to AA. You know what it's like when you sit there and you think to yourself, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And you can't find an answer to the question. And I was in that place, and I got nowhere to go when I'm all by myself. I'm alone in that bit of morass of self-pity. I've separated myself pretty much from the world because, again, to me, that's normal. It's normal for me to be in that place as an alcoholic. That's the way I see it. And I got nowhere else to go but just to curl up in God. I was grateful when I walked into AA. I was grateful in a sense that I never had prejudice towards the idea of God. Yet for me, the most baffling thing is knowing that there's a God there and actually having faith, not just a belief that maybe something's out there, but knowing based on experience there is a power there, I've experienced it, but wondering, why am I still like this? And the same thing happened each and every time. I got to a point where I got up the next day and the obsession wasn't there and I didn't pick up the bottle. And again, that power decided it's got better I've had, and something drew me back to AA. And when I look back on these things, I couldn't get this for quite a few years. But I was quite overwhelmed when I saw in those experiences there was a power working in my life. I just couldn't see it at the time. Because I wasn't coming back. Something happened in the last time. I can't explain it. I can't put it to words. There was a shift. There was something different. The only way I can explain it is that I think it was because I had never been to such a low place on that last bus. I don't believe in rock bottoms. To me, I found out I can go and dig through rock. And I thought when I got into AA, I'd hit rock bottom. And without getting into semantics, in a way I had. And then when I busted, I thought, my God, this has got to be rock bottom. And then I busted again and again and again. And I started thinking, like, where's bottom? How far have you got to dig? Like, I found I can go and dig through a lot more rock. And I started to think, my goodness, how far down's rock bottom? So to me, it's not about rock bottom. It's about surrender. It's about that absolute surrender from the core of your spirit and the core of your being. He says in the big book, many of us have got to take a lot of hard knocks to learn this truth, and I certainly had my own experience of that. And it was that surrender that I saw, that there was a power doing something for me that I couldn't do myself. And because there was something different, I guess the only way I can describe it was in a sense of feeling more defeated in every fibre of my being than I'd ever felt before. That I can't even explain it. It just opened up to perhaps more of an open mind. I don't know. I really can't explain it. But there was a series of events that happened, and I remember one of them. It was at a meeting venue that to this day I still go to. And there was a wise old man around that originally got sober in Adelaide. He was German. He was arrogant. He rubbed people up the wrong way, and for about 3 years I thought to myself, I'm not going anywhere near this guy. But I came to find out underneath that perceived arrogance that he had, he was caring, he was understanding, and he wasn't frightened in calling it like it was. And he helped me an awful lot. A lot of people did, but this guy in particular. I was standing about barely a week sober in this venue, and I was shattered in every department. And I remember talking to this guy, Bert, and just saying to him, I don't get it. And I was resentful at other members because they were staying sober. As you can see, I wasn't well. Why I'm resentful at them? Because I'm not having the same experience and I keep busting. And I said, I don't get it. He only does 3 meetings a week and she's sober and she does nothing around AA. And I don't get it. Why are all these people sober and I'm not? And there was a turning point in his answer, and he looked at me between the eyes as he did. And he said, look, he said, it doesn't matter what anyone else is doing or not doing. And he said, you need to find what you need to do. And I don't know why, but that resonated with me. Up in Spiritual Experience, he talks about three essentials for recovery: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And what I find is the more pain I'm in, I will be motivated to look into things that normally I wouldn't want to. And for some reason, I went home that night, and because of the pain and the suffering, it got me thinking. It shifted my perception of others and them, those's and they's, and what they're doing or not doing, to I guess the realization, well, here's where you are, Steve. What is it that you need to do to overcome this? So I guess blindly at the time, because I couldn't see it, but what was coming to me was, how do I escape this? What is it that I need to do? And my focus got on that, born out of pain and desperation. And how it unfolded, that I guess is why I'm sitting here still today sober, is that this fella encouraged me to come down and have a look at a big book meeting in this venue. They had one there on a Wednesday night. Him and his partner started it many years before, and I didn't want to go. And I went down this night. I think I started to do some of these things because, even though I didn't want to do them, it was kind of maybe a bit of that willingness and open-mindedness. I guess I was in a place without understanding, and he thought, well, I'll give it a go, and what have I got to lose? Anyway, I went, and I remember sitting there and I thinking, man, I'm never going to get this. You know, I'm not a study person. I looked at the book and I thought, I'll never figure that out. And I, pretty much as long as my arm at the end of that meeting, why I wasn't coming back, and old Bert asked me that. And I said, oh, I'm too new around, you're up there and I'm down here and you're ahead of me and I'm not that far advanced, and rattled him off 10 reasons why I wasn't coming back. And he looked at me and he said, well, why don't you come back? And gives you an insight into what it's about. And I don't know why, but I did, based on what he said. And what happened to me was, when I started in this big book study and I started to go back every Wednesday, I started to see step one about, what does it mean to have a lack of power? I knew about that physical allergy. I got that when I come into AA. I got it. The one thing that makes me an alcoholic, not what's in my head, no, not how much of a nutcase I am or if I'm got it all together in the head's irrelevant. What makes me an alcoholic is, once I put alcohol into my body, I can't stop drinking. I got that. So it made a lot of sense to me in AA, don't pick up the first drink. What I didn't know is that at certain times I have no mental defense against the first drink. That's what I didn't get. And I started to see just bits and pieces every time I went back through the big book with these people. 90% of what they talked about and read in the book to me was Chinese. I had no freaking idea what they were saying, but there were these, sometimes it was just one or two or three things came out of that meeting like a light bulb moment, like a, oh my God, I never saw that. I never understood that. And what I started to see that was so vital to me is exactly what they wrote about in step one, how the alcoholic will go along for days, weeks, even months, and he will get to that place where suddenly the thought crosses my mind that I'll have a drink, it'll take me in a way, it'll give me that ease and comfort for whatever the reason, but I have this twist of mind where I believe the lie and I just simply have no defense and I can't stop myself picking it up. And I looked back and I thought, my God, that's what's been happening to me in AA. And I started to understand lack of power of the mind, that with my mind, didn't matter how much knowledge and information I had around AA, I get to this little place and something happens inside my head and I go back and pick it up. And it's really bizarre as an alcoholic, because as an alcoholic, there's something in my brain that connects with alcohol that I see that it's a solution to my problems, and that's all I can see, that it's going to be a solution to whatever problem I'm going through. I can't recall the damage and the suffering, and I just pick it up. Just ain't no big deal. And I saw what lack of defense meant. I saw what lack of power meant. And I was doing this other steps meeting at the time, 6 or 7 months over, and I had this profound experience where I just got clear that at certain times I lack defense and I'm just going to go pick it up. And I remember that night I got in the car, drive home, and all the way home, I think I was 6, 7 months sober this time round, and I remember all the way home going, you're going to drink again, Steve. At some point, some place down the track, you're just going to go pick it up again, just like you've been doing for the last 3 years, and there's not a damn thing that's going to stop you. And I got it. I saw it. I realized that I cannot rely on my mind, my reason, my logic, my abilities to think my way out of these things are just non-existent when it comes to alcohol. And this was another one of those turning points to me, because at the time I was doing this other group where these guys were doing a steps workshop. There's an interesting thing I had about that, is that as I start to see these things and the little light bulbs going on left, right and centre, as I moved around AA, what started to interest me, that not everybody, but a lot of people who shared at different meetings in their share would get to some point where they would make reference to, they looked in the big book, they got a sponsor, they went through the steps, and I started thinking to myself, why are all these people in their stories talking about this one common thing, the steps in the book? And I started to think, there's a lot of people making reference to change came about when they looked at the book, and I started thinking, what's that all about? So I find that very interesting, that when, if one person tells me what they did to overcome that, I'm going to think, oh yeah, that's nice, poof, maybe it won't work for me. But if I start to see people all over the place all pointing to the same thing and how change came about when they looked at this same thing, it gives that thing power and it draws me to have a look at it. And I did exactly that, and I saw myself in step one in the big book, and it took me to a place where I realized, I think again 6-7 months, I can't remember, I'd been looking at the book enough to know that I can no longer just study it at a big book meeting, that I had to actually reach out and ask someone for help, grab a sponsor to help me through the steps. And I really had no idea what that was about, and to be honest, I didn't want to. I was frightened at what I was going to discover. But again, there was something drawing me. And that's been a thread all through my journey, kind of like this. Something was drawing me along these lines. Maybe that was that power work. And I reckon it was, because my head gives a lot of reasons why I don't want to do these things. So I grabbed this guy that I'd heard, and I went out to find. I had two criteria. I thought, I've got to find myself someone who's had a clear experience. I was in a place where I was gravely concerned that I was going to drink again, and I thought, I can't afford to miss this thing. It's like that guy said to me, you've got to find what you need to do or you're in a lot of trouble. And I thought, I've got to find someone who's had a clear experience at whatever these steps are. And the other thing that I was preferably looking for was someone who was open spiritually. I don't know why, but they were two criteria, and I came across this guy. He used to work in the unions. He had long hair down nearly to his bum. He always wore this beanie pulled right down over his forehead, and all you could see were these beady little eyes sticking out below this beanie. And I thought, oh my God, why am I asking this guy? I thought, if I say the wrong thing, he'll probably punch me or yell at me. And I was drawn to this guy, yet every fibre in my being was saying, don't, not him, don't get him, don't get him. Anyway, I went up and approached him, and he blew me away. He looked at me and he said, I would be honoured to help you. And that floored me, because I thought he was going to tell me to bugger off. Anyway, I went round to this guy's house, and I was petrified. I just wish I wasn't in that place. See, I like to look for the easier, softer way. I like to think that I can just do 3 or 4 meetings a week and that'll do me, and I'll kick along happily in sobriety. But that has not been my experience. And this guy knew I'd been having a look at the big book at a couple of meetings. And again, I was talking to some people the other night about this. And I went round to his joint, and he looked at me and he said, he knew I'd been looking at the book, and he said to me, he said, Ryle, where do you want to start? And I thought, oh, this is good. He's asking me where I want to start. And the next thing I say were the best words I have ever said in my whole life. I thought for a moment about, oh, well, I've looked in the book. I'm half an expert already. I'll tell him what I think we should do. And I just stopped midway and I looked him in the eyes and I said, I'm willing to follow you. And he smiled and he said, right, let's go and have a look at step one. And this guy started to expose me to the big book through his experience, and we went through, and I was frightened that I was going to fail. I was petrified that I will do something or miss something to sabotage my own journey. I felt for sure I'll never get through it, because I never finish anything I start. So as I started to be guided through this process of the steps, two things were happening: all that fear of failure and missing the boat, yet I was starting to have new experiences and get clear on things about my alcoholism that I hadn't seen before. And I had an experience in step one that again gave me this realization that my mind, as I read in a book many years ago, a biography about Bill Wilson called Not God, this guy said when Bill got to the third step, the reason Bill took the third step was under the realization that this thing in his head that gave him the ability to reason, to ration and to logic things out when it came to alcohol, he could no longer rely on. And I saw that. And I was talking about this with a friend of mine today, that that's the most vital thing for me to see, that I cannot rely on my head, not only where it comes to alcohol, but for the manageability of my life. My head is the worst place I can go to try and find solutions to my problems. And my own experience clearly shows me that I am not the best person to be running my life. My judgments, my thoughts, my perceptions are very deluded and warped and skewed. But the joke is, I think they're okay. I think they're pretty good. So the joke really is on me. And I remember we got to this guy, we got to the third step at this guy's place. And to me, AA is weird. It's good weird, but sometimes it's really weird weird. And I thought to myself, I'll be right with this God bizzo. And we got to the third step, and this guy, we talked about why we were doing it and what we're actually going to do, and he pointed out the relevant sections in the book, and this fear started coming up inside, and I felt on the verge of taking the third step that I was stepping off into this abyss. And I was absolutely surprised. I didn't know why I was feeling this, but what it was the realization that what I was about to do was to let go completely, that I was not going to be relying on me anymore. And what I come to see in that in there is a sense of security in the familiar. When I think I know, or think I have a way or a method or an idea that'll work, to me that gives me a sense of security. But when I don't know and I've got no control, it brings up a lot of fear, because I don't know what's going to happen. And I realized I was at that place in the third step. But what that had brought me to those previous steps is the realization that I have no choice. I have no other options. I'm either going to go back and drink again, or I have to, perhaps with childlike faith, just take this leap of faith and go in this direction. And in some ways I wasn't very comfortable doing it, yet there was an inner knowing that this is the direction I had to go in. And we took the third step, and basically that this guy led me through, and I could babble on about that for hours, but I moved through the process of the steps, and I think in the fourth and the fifth step, I guess in one way to sum that up relatively briefly, I tried to just do things the best I could. I still had that fear of failure and stuffing it up as I went through, but again, what I was aware of that seemed to be something drawing me through the process. And I remember when I drove home from his place after doing the fifth step, and he talks in the book about a new happiness and a new freedom, and I started to experience these things all the way through it. And I remember driving home this night, and I felt light. I felt inside a lightness that I hadn't felt in a long, long, long time. And I just had this little smile on my face, and I was driving home, and I saw what I'd gone over in the fourth and the fifth with him, and I realized I just think the wrong way. It ain't no biggie. I just think the wrong way. And again, it showed me that I can no longer rely on myself, my will, my thinking, my perceptions. And I moved through and was guided through step 6 and 7, had a great experience with that, moved into the amends process, which I was petrified, but I started to experience those 9-step promises. And then I think for me, this guy pointed out quite clearly in step 10 and 11 what we need to do, and I became willing to try and put those things into my life. And I didn't have a profound experience after the steps. I had an awakening. I guess that can be described in many ways. I had an awakening to the truth of myself, to a deeper reality of a God, of a power in the universe that is working with us. There was a change, there was a shift, there was something that had never happened to me before in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew inwardly that I had to continue along these lines. A couple of things that happened back then, and I remember before we started, this guy said to me, he said, I'll take you through these things, provided you're willing to go out and help others, just like I'm doing with you. And I nodded at him and thought inside my head, no friggin' way, I can't go and do this with anybody else. There's no way I can do that. But when I got up there, I became willing to try, and I was petrified of going out, because inwardly I still had a low opinion of myself to an extent. Inwardly I didn't think that I could do what some of these other guys were doing around AA. But again, there was some power drawing me along these lines. And from that day when I went through those 12 steps, I had a very interesting experience for me. A couple of months after this process, when I sort of was starting to, I guess, settle into this, perhaps to quote Bill Wilson, new dimension of existence that was kind of took a bit of time to get my head around. And I remember one night I was standing at this very same meeting, and I was standing outside having a smoke and by myself, and I was just looking up into the night sky. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. It hit me like a ton of bricks. And I couldn't see the events that took place to lead me to that point. I couldn't see, like I said before, I know you're there, God, but why isn't it working for me? I couldn't see how it was working. But when I look back, what I saw is that crying out to the heart from God over those years that I was suffering and busting and relapsing and nearly not coming back to AA, that crying out from the depth of my soul, what I saw when I looked back, that through that desperation and open-mindedness and willingness, I was led to certain people who suggested certain things that I reluctantly followed, and I did those certain things to the best of my ability. Nobody said you got to be perfect at it. And I had a new experience, and I remember standing there looking up into the sky like a revelation, going, oh, now I can see how you were working, God. Now I can see how it was all put together. And it blew me away, because I didn't think I was going to get it. And I saw that I just couldn't see the way God was working. But when I looked back, I saw it, because I realized I'd experienced that new sense of freedom and happiness that they talked about. And it was that experience that made me realize I need to keep going in this direction. And to the best of my ability, over the last 19 years, I've tried to be willing to not only be involved in the fellowship. I've never gotten away from the fellowship of AA. I still have a home group. But what I've done is tried to put myself out there to do what that guy did for me. I had such a... When I started talking earlier, I was so... When I look back, I'm so grateful those members were there when I first walked into AA. I have so much fond sentiment that they were there and they cared. Just like I was so grateful this guy had given all this time to help me, because I thought I'd be a pain in the neck to him. I didn't think he'd want to help me, yet he did. He gave me the time. He helped me understand. He guided me through this process. And to this day, I haven't seen this guy for quite a long time. I was thinking about him yesterday, and I haven't seen him for ages. And it got me thinking, I'm so grateful he was there and gave me that, because I was nearly walking out the door of AA. And I thought to myself, I need to do the same thing. And I didn't think I had anything in me. I thought, I'll give it a go, but I really still inwardly, you know, still had a lot of that. The low self-esteem and a lot of those things, they don't just dry up and go away overnight. They start to dissipate, and in some cases things just melt away. But in a general sense, you know, I guess having said that, in one way, to me, the process of the steps start after you go through them. I got to grow along these lines. And I started to go out and work with others. And what I've come to see, that there are, it's described to me in the circle and the triangle. I had it pointed out to me years ago, that symbol that has since been removed due to copyright laws, but our symbol of the circle and the triangle, if I can call it ours, for want of a better term, I will, where it talks about unity, recovery and service. And as an ancient spiritual symbol, that triangle means mind, body and spirit as one, not separate, non-dual, a oneness. And I've come to see in my experiences being that that is such a beautiful example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Recovery is found through the 12 steps, unity within the fellowship, and the service work, as I've come to understand it, isn't service at meetings, but service as in going out there and working with other alcoholics. You know, become willing to carry this message to other alcoholics, just like people have done to me. And the first promise of hope on that can be found on the very first page of the Big Book, where it talks about how, you know, hundreds of members have recovered from this illness if we fulfill these three areas in the circle and the triangle. And what I saw when I look back at that I really only had one side of the triangle. I was hugely massive and needing to be buried in the guts of the fellowship, but it had done nothing to treat my alcoholism. It didn't treat the spiritual malady that I lived in that I didn't even know I had, and that's exactly what this process of the steps does. To this day, it treats my head, it treats that spiritual malady, it treats my ego when it gets rebuilt, and it gives me access to a power that not only allows me to keep sober a day at a time. And I think the 10-step promises to me sum that up so beautifully. See, I'm lazy by nature. You know, to me it seems like a lot of hard work, but what I've come to experience, this process of the steps, it doesn't require effort and work, and it certainly doesn't require knowledge. All it really requires is that willingness, open-mindedness, and the willingness to become honest with myself. And if I follow directions, the rest of it comes. And the most beautiful thing is, it gives me freedom, that the one thing I'm in AA for, it gives me freedom from that obsession to drink. And it talks about that in step 10, that the problem will be removed through no thought or effort on my part. And when I read those 10-step promises, it's just the most beautiful thing that we've got in Alcoholics Anonymous. It also starts to treat my self-centeredness, the anger, the resentments, the self-pity, the anxiety, the fears, all those things that rule my life that I create within myself, but I don't know I'm doing it, and I certainly can't escape from it. It gives me, over time, more and more freedom from that. And having said that, I look back over a limited amount of time in AA, some 19 and a half years, and I find that as time goes by, I just sit and reflect back, and I become deeply grateful in the sense that I found a solution in Alcoholics Anonymous, that it works, and it's way more powerful than what I could even begin to imagine in those early years. I see that because I was the person that they described in that Big Book, it will treat that, it will treat my head, it will treat that obsession, it will take it away from me, provided I do certain things. And the most beautiful thing is, and when I had the good fortune to go to the States and participate in a brilliant, fantastic experience of AA over there, this guy that I was hanging out with from Texas, he made an interesting statement that I'd never heard it put this way. We hear a lot in AA, I've got to give it away to get it. And in a lot of ways, that makes a lot of sense. To me, the work in Alcoholics Anonymous is working with other alcoholics. Sure, it's about being in the fellowship and all that, but bottom line, it's about that 12-step to share our experience with others, to hopefully offer the same freedom that we found within ourselves. But this guy said, I got to give it away to get it. And I thought, I've never heard it put that before. We've got to give it away to get it. And it suddenly hit me, because I thought, every time I've had the honourable experience of working with another alcoholic through the steps, what I get out of it is amazing. It is a twofold thing. They can't see it, just like I couldn't see it when this guy gave it to me. I didn't realize what I was giving him back. And now I start to know that working with others. And not everybody gets it. But I guess it's just like Lois pointed out to Bill when he raced out there after he had a profound experience and tried to show that to other alcoholics. And he went back to Lois and he said, I don't get it, Lois. This thing's happened to me. And I can't. These people aren't getting sober. And she looked at him and said, well, Bill, they're not getting sober, but you're staying sober. So I got it again. If I'm willing to put myself out there to help others, I hope they do. I hope, my hope is, if I can help one of those poor people who are struggling, if I can offer them something, I would gladly go and do so. But if they don't get it, I'm still here and I'm sober and I've still got that freedom, and I know I need to keep doing that, otherwise I'm going to fall to bits and go back and drink. I'm very clear on that, and I don't doubt the fact that if I drop off my spiritual practices, it'll probably be, you'll see, coming back in here at some time down the track, having drunk again. To me, alcoholism, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really interest me, in a sense, how long ago my last drink was, but based on the nature of this illness, it's how close am I to my next drink. That's the thing that brings us alcoholics down. I might think that I'm doing all right, then a day, a week, a month later, bang, I'm just drunk again. I'm trying to get my head around how I got back out there. So I have a lot of great respect for attitude for Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a lot of gratitude for this thing that's been passed on to us over the years. It's an amazing thing. It's a divine thing. As this old member used to say, he would often sit back with his hands on his big stomach and say, I'm sure this thing's born out of divine intervention. And ever since I heard him say that 19 years ago, I've thought over the years, this guy's right. There's something going on here. There's a power working through AA. I've just got to do the things necessary to access it, and I get the freedom. So I'm a very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel blessed because, as I said, I was nearly going to walk away from the one and only thing that was going to save me. And I think that's the saddest thing. I've seen some beautiful people who have gone back and drunk, and I've known quite a lot over the years that have taken their life, and they were just great people, but they were struggling, and for whatever reason, maybe they just didn't get to have a look at what we've got to offer. I don't know, but Gordy always puts it up, this thing's fatal, it is a fatal illness, and every time I read that I think to myself how right he is, but we've got a tremendous solution to this problem. I really think that's about all I've got to share. All I can say again is that I have tried to be willing to do the full package of AA. I'm not the best person to adhere to it. I get slack and lazy sometime. I make a lot of mistakes that cost me. But in all those things in the dealing with life, what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is, now I can see what I'm doing wrong. Now I can find out where I've gone wrong, what I'm doing, and why it's causing trouble, and I know how to fix it. Prior to this process, I didn't know that. I had no idea. But again, the most beautiful for new freedom, freedom from alcohol, and freedom from the pain and the suffering that I can create within my own mind. And having said that, I just sit here quietly now and think, Alcoholics Anonymous, what a beautiful thing we have right in front of us. It's open to all of us. I would like to thank the Unity Group for allowing me the opportunity to share. I think I've been around Unity for 8 or so years. I've come to know a lot of beautiful people in here. Sadly, seen a lot of people come and go. I've had the good fortune to meet quite a few people. And for quite a while, a big part of my AA has been popping in these rooms. I wish you guys all the best on your journey, and I really hope for you that you can all find the freedom that I've certainly come to know. Again, it's a very beautiful thing. Thanks very much again for the opportunity to share. Thanks, Janice. Cheers, guys.